Have you exercised one of the most important privileges that you have? The privilege, the right to vote, the right to influence the leadership positions in this state, in your parish, in your city, that comes up this Saturday. Early voting is now ended, and you have this opportunity Saturday to do and exercise one of the most important privileges that you have. Here to talk with us about the statewide election races is Dr. Robert Hogan, professor of political science at LSU. His research interests focus on campaigns, political parties, and interest groups at the state level. Dr. Hogan, welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you.
So we've got all of these a number of statewide elected offices that are up for grabs this Saturday. Got mixed reviews or results, I should say, on early voting. Some parishes incredibly high, and others not so much. What do you read into that?
Well, across the state, in large measure, due to the differences and competitiveness of different races. I mean, there's some parts of the state where you have some hotly contested state legislative races. All 144 of those seats are up for election, and about 60% of them or so are competitive. They at least have a Democrat and Republican running, at least one Democrat and Republican running in them. So the variation that you see across parishes is no doubt a reflection of the competition that you're seeing in these different races.
One of the things that struck me in all of these races, they all seem to kind of have, they broke out almost at the same time as it relates to TV, radio, the typical mm-hmm. campaign spending. They seem to have kept their money close to their vest for a much longer time than ordinary, it seemed to me. Mm-hmm. And they tried to shorten this election cycle as opposed to elongating it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing here in Louisiana, of course, is that you have the possibility of a runoff election. So you see campaigns being a lot more judicious in terms of how they allocate their funding. They know that if they're lucky enough to make it to the runoff, then they've got a runoff campaign. And those campaigns can sometimes be much more expensive than the initial round of campaigning, and where sometimes you see turnout even higher in the runoff election. So it's something that they're trying to budget for, but you're right. It seems to me that it's only been the last couple weeks that you saw a huge sort of upsurge in the number of campaign commercials that you see on television and on radio, and I think that is often what happens in campaigns. You got a lot of the simple, the signage goes up first. People build name recognition. And then it's only in the last few weeks of the campaign that you voters are given the opportunity to understand where the candidates fall on various positions.
Obviously, the top of ballot race this year is the governor's race. You have the John Bel Edwards, a Democrat, who's the incumbent. And I think there are nine candidates in the race, but really two mm-hmm. leading Republicans. Eddie Rasponi, who was running third for a long time, seems to have jumped past Ralph Abraham, congressman from Northeast Louisiana, Republican as well, who's running third.
Right, right. This is an interesting sort of change in events. You would think that the Ralph Abraham's established congressional campaign, I mean, he's run a couple times in one of the congressional districts, of course, has won. You would think that would translate into to name recognition and to better organizational skills across the state in order to get people to vote for him. It's interesting that he looks to be being overtaken by the outsider Rasponi, who just started into politics here, at least in elected politics. And right now the polls are showing, the latest polls seem to indicate that Edwards is flirting with that 50% mark there, the magical mark. If he gets over that, of course, he won't have to go to a runoff. But if he doesn't, then it's going to be a runoff. And the question is, who's it going to be? Will Ralph Abraham's organizational skill, the fact also that he's got a lot of endorsements of a lot of the established Republicans across the state, will that kick in at the last minute to push him into the second spot? And of course, to a runoff if one is needed.
As a Republican, I was kind of intrigued by the fact that neither one of these candidates, in my view, Ralph Abraham or Eddie Rasponi, have been really able to rally the troops. And then you see the president's coming Friday. His son was here Wednesday. Vice President Mike Pence was down here this week as well. None of whom were rallying behind an individual candidate, just kind of pushing the party platform. Right.
Absolutely. I mean, no, this is an amazing set of events, I would say. I mean, for a Democratic incumbent governor to have as large a percentage as he has in a state that has obviously been trending Republican with all the other southern states in recent years. A lot of people said that Edwards was an accidental governor in the sense that he defeated David Vitter, had a lot of personal problems that were made central in the campaign. By Edwards' own effort to make them central to the campaign. But nonetheless, this is a Democratic governor. You would think that this would be something that a Republican would be able to walk away from, walk away with, I should say. But it's amazing, really, that you still see these Republicans in this sort of 20% range as they are. From another perspective, though, you got to look at what sort of issues are being considered here. And on a lot of issues, the candidates, the Democrats and the Republicans, the three leading contenders, aren't very far apart. On the hot button issues of guns and abortion, those things have been neutralized by Edwards' very centrist, if not conservative, position on those issues. And on issues like Medicaid expansion, that the Republican opponents seem to be agreeing with the Democrat on this. And so when voters don't see clear lines of division, clear lines of differences between the campaigns' positions, it's like, well, why should I vote against an incumbent? When you're voting against an incumbent like this, and you're voting to fire the current sitting governor, and people have to have a good reason to do that. And if issue differences aren't there, that are clearly obvious to them, they may choose either not to vote or to vote with the incumbent.
Could this be looked upon as a bellwether race for moderate Democrats, that they can be competitive with both right-wing conservatives as well as those that are more, the center of the platform of the Republican Party?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. And I think that Bell Edwards is copying the recipe of moderate Democrats that have been able to survive in the South, in the Southern region especially. They can win if they take these very Republican-like issue positions. Yes, they can survive. So absolutely. As this election as a bellwether, though, I think, however this goes, it's going to be viewed by one side or the other as an omen of things to come. If John Bel Edwards wins this thing outright, the National Democrats are going to seize upon this and say, look, this is really almost a referendum on Republicanism, on Trumpism. Democrats will certainly claim this. If Republicans are able to keep him below that 50%, and one of these Republicans, Abraham or Rasponi, is able to win, that will be a signal. National Republicans, the most prominent one being Trump, will declare victory and say, look, this shows you Trump, of course, will claim it as a victory for himself. But Republicans will say that this is a victory for Republicans. So parties use outcomes of elections to mean all sorts of things. It doesn't necessarily mean they're true.
Right. Yeah.
My own personal view is that this is an off-year election. Every election, this election in particular, is very different from what goes on at the national level. It's very different from what goes on in most congressional districts across the country. So in that way, it doesn't tell us much. It isn't a bellwether or a pattern in any sort of way. I think it'd be very difficult to side with either of those conclusions.
Which strikes me as kind of the bellwether issue for Republicans in running against Democrats is the notion of taxes. And they've tried to kind of tar and feather the governor relative to raising taxes. But the facts are is that a Republican-controlled legislature is the one that actually voted for the taxes, because a governor, as you well know, can't unilaterally raise taxes. How much do you think that has played into this election?
Well, again, I don't think it has. It's difficult to criticize. You're absolutely right. It's the Republican legislature. Key Republicans in the House and the Senate claim credit for coming to a budget deal that raised taxes.
Right.
So it is not, you know, the parties aren't far apart on this. Neither of the Republican leading candidates in this, Rasponi nor Abraham, say let's drastically reduce government spending at the state. Neither of them are doing that. Neither of them are really proposing dramatic cuts, other than cuts in businesses as a way to presumably stimulate economic growth and business investment in the state. But there aren't bright lines of difference here. Now that doesn't mean that they're not going to try to draw distinctions.
Right.
You see that they're trying to, the Republicans are trying to nationalize this contest in the best way they can. And then you're seeing John Bel Edwards, of course, trying to run against Bobby Jindal as best he can, is to connect him with the Jindal administration, which you know ended in a way that wasn't very favorable for Bobby Jindal, in that he's not viewed as favorably any longer. So
yeah, I think one of the things that makes this race unique as well, and you bringing this up, is that the Republicans have a lot of hurdles they have to get over, and one being Jindal leaving the state with a $2 billion deficit.
Right, that's right. It's the metaphor that the governor constantly uses. You know, he ran the car in the ditch here, and we've had to get the budget stabilized. Have had to raise revenue sources, and they have cut some spending in certain areas, although it's grown in other areas such as healthcare, where you know those costs tend to rise regardless of what the government does. This is a situation where you have a Democratic governor in complete assistance with a Republican legislature in bringing us to the situation that we are at now.
When we come back from break, I'd like to talk to about some of the down ballot races as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're talking to Dr. Robert Hogan, professor of political science at LSU, focuses on campaigns, political parties, and interest groups at the state level. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. We're talking to Dr. Robert Hogan, professor of political science at LSU. And, professor, as we consider some of the down ballot races, lieutenant governor, there are two candidates there, one Democrat, one Republican, the incumbent, Billy Nungesser, who has actually been very supportive of the governor and done a lot of collaborative stuff with Governor John Bel Edwards, which is interesting as well. Doesn't seem to be too much of a race here. I hadn't seen anything from the Jones campaign at all.
Yeah, I mean, that is another one of these. I mean, that's one of these races that you don't hear a lot about. The lieutenant governor, it's hard to get excited about that kind of race, given simply the nature of the requirements of it, or I should say the responsibilities of it. So, you know, I don't think you're going to see probably a lot of fireworks there. And especially as you point out, Nungesser not distinguishing himself very much from the Democrat at the top of the ticket.
Right. The other race, Secretary of State Kyle Ardoin's the incumbent. He comes in after the previous incumbent resigns from office, and I guess Gwen Collins Greenup is the biggest candidate against him. He's a Republican. She's a Democrat. Once again, this party combat, so to speak.
That's right. And I mean, we often refer to these races as being sort of demonstrating what the normal vote is in the state. That is, because there is not any major issue in the Secretary of State's race that separates people, it gives you a good idea of sort of what the baseline Democrat and Republican support level is in the state. And I think that's probably what you're going to see in this kind of race. And the outcome is going to be one that probably strongly favors Republicans, and in this case, the incumbent.
Yeah, not unlike the lieutenant governor's race, this race doesn't seem to have a contentious issue involved in it either.
Right, exactly.
And I guess a race that's even more of a sleeper, the attorney general. I actually thought he was unopposed until I started seeing all of these commercials that he was running, and I was like, I didn't realize he even had a race.
Right. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, some candidates run for reasons other than hoping to win, maybe. This might be one of these races where you're trying to get an issue out there or maybe laying groundwork for a future run at some other office.
There's been a lot of conjecture that Jeff Landry's considering running for governor next time. Actually, there's also been conjecture that probably wouldn't be too terribly upset if a Republican didn't win to clear the path for him next time.
That's right. That's right. And this kind of race, sort of knocking out of the park, which is likely to happen, probably is a good way to set himself up for a future run at the highest office there.
The treasurer's race, John Schroeder, Republican from St. Tammany Parish, as the incumbent, one Democrat and one other candidate, Teresa Kenney, no party affiliation, Derek Edwards, who I think has run a couple of times for a couple of statewide races.
Right, right. That's another one where you don't have, again, what is it that these offices do and what are the issues? There are not a whole lot of issues that people can talk about other than competence and judgment and their experience that they base how they do.
The next race seemed to get a lot of...
I'm sorry. Unfortunately, I have class.
I'm sorry. I thought we had you through the next break. I apologize. Didn't mean to keep you that long, but I appreciate it.
No, that's okay.
All right.
That's okay. But thank you very much. It was nice talking with you.
Not a problem. Dr. Robert Hogan, professor of political science at LSU. I'm sorry. My bad. We were confused. I thought we had him to the next break. But anyway, the next race, Commissioner of Agriculture and Forestry, obviously Mike Strain is the incumbent Republican. A number of folks qualified against him, many of whom I think are on the legalization of marijuana issue, and there are those that have been frustrated a little bit with some of the regulatory hurdles that have been put in place, most of which I think are absolutely necessary and are just appropriate in light of the fact that the FDA is not involved in this, and there's still this rub or friction between the federal government and state government and local government as to how this industry is going to be regulated. It seems to be moving along in the medical marijuana stage, and it'll be interesting to see how that race ultimately ends up as well. The last race, Commissioner of Insurance, Jim Donlan's been the commissioner for a while. In fact, he's been one of the few insurance commissioners that hadn't been indicted and gone to jail. And that's been almost every one for a number of years now. And his opponent, Tim Temple, another Republican, two Republicans in this race. Tim Temple's family actually owned an insurance company at one time and have been in the insurance industry for a long, long time throughout the state of Louisiana, very proactive in helping the state set up any number of programs as well. It's going to be interesting to see what this race is going to be, how the turnout in this race. Obviously, Mr. Temple has been advertising for a while. So has Jim Donlan. His record, Jim, that is, mostly intact. I mean, not a lot of controversy there. There's always this issue about whether or not how much the insurance commissioner can actually influence rates. The whole structure of the office from a regulatory standpoint plays some role, but is not a deciding factor role in rates for the most part, because there are matrices that they have to go by where they can't be arbitrary and capricious. You can't just say, well, I don't feel like y'all are, you know, entitled to one at the present time. There's math behind it. There's data behind it that he has to look at in determining whether or not they are eligible for rate increases. A lot of folks kind of don't view it that way, and it's not necessarily that they have that complete total authority. A lot of it lies in the state legislature as to how this is going to be play out and what they can consider or not consider as it relates to rating these companies and looking at their expense rates and their loss ratios and determining whether or not they are entitled to a rate increase. But this is the typical race of someone who's been in office for a while against a newcomer, one who has not served in public office, who decides to go out on a statewide level first time out look to be elected as the commissioner of insurance. And this is going to be a race to watch. A lot of folks are saying this is going to have an interesting outcome. It'll be decided. There are only two candidates in this race, so it'll be decided in this Saturday as to who the victor is going to be in this race for sure. All right, we want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text 870-870 on a Blue Runner opinion poll. Are you voting on Saturday? Did you early vote or not voting at all? We'll come back with those results when we return. On to Blue Runner Opinion Poll, are you voting on Saturday? Did you early vote or not voting at all? 59% of the respondents say they're going to vote on Saturday. 36% say they voted early, and 8% not voting. That's tragic. You ought to exercise that privilege, that right to vote. You're also going to be voting on four constitutional amendments, and a lot of people just kind of fly through these and I'm not sure that that's a good practice because once they're in the Constitution, it's hard to get them out of the Constitution, and it's worthy of spending a little time reading the verbiage, reading the language, trying to understand the constitutional amendment. Amendment number one creates a property tax exemption for certain goods destined for the outer continental shelf. This really has to do with the Interstate Commerce Clause as to whether or not local governing jurisdictions have the ability to tax certain properties that are destined for the outer continental shelf, and therefore that would possibly be considered interstate commerce. There are very few parishes that are going to be affected. Most of those that touch the Gulf of Mexico, where a lot of this property is actually inventoried while waiting to go out on supply ships or otherwise to predominantly drilling and production rigs on the outer continental shelf. In the end, I don't think the amendment is going to clear up much of anything. This all comes down to documentation on the company's part as to what is ultimately destined for there and how do they prove whether or not these goods are actually being transported to the outer continental shelf. So in many cases, as a result of local audits, it's determined that they're not. And there lies the conflict. So what you have is a lot of companies that have shoddy record keeping that stimulate lawsuits, and this is an attempt to try and clear that up. I don't have strong feelings one way or the other. I don't think it's going to minimize or eliminate these lawsuits. I think we're going to continue to have this conflict because a lot of it has to do with record keeping. Amendment number two, allow the Education Excellence Fund to finance three more schools in public TV. Some of these schools were not in existence during the original passage of this, and they don't want to have to go back to the state legislature every year in order to fight for this funding or appropriation from the state legislature. So that's why it's being put in the Constitution, so they get it as a right, and they don't have to go fight and get the votes each and every year. There are those that don't like to clutter the Constitution with this type of amendment and additional verbiage. I understand why you don't want to have to go and fight that battle every year. If you could avoid it, I get it, because it's not a pleasant exercise. Number three, allow the Board of Tax Appeals to rule on constitutional questions. This was created kind of outside of the traditional judicial court system in order to deal with very complicated taxable transactions and to make sure that you had learned individuals in the tax law, meaning the state tax law, being in a position to be able to decide and to either validate one side or the other in the friction that's caused by how you would characterize some of these transactions. I believe it's absolutely necessary, and I think it would be a step in the right direction if they were actually given that and would actually streamline and remove some of the docket clogging issues that we have from a tax perspective out there. And I think if handled appropriately, there's always going to be winners and losers, as well there should be. There's two sides to the issue, but let's get the issue resolved and have these decisions have some precedent in this state, so that local tax collectors can streamline and not get bogged down in these interpretive battles, and have somebody independent of the collector and the payer actually making the decision. Amendment 4, we talked a lot about, folks. This gives New Orleans the ability to create a residential property tax exemption for affordable housing developments. I'm not opposed to giving local government control. In fact, I'm very much in favor of it. But in this case, we have completely fumbled the manner in which strategically we have set out to provide affordable housing. In fact, I had folks from Housing NOLA the other day here that talked about the departure from the strategic plan, the inability to fulfill the mission as it relates to affordable housing. We are so behind the curveball that I believe that we may end up overutilizing this tool. And what that does is erode the tax base. And I believe that that will stimulate tax recipient bodies to be more creative as to how they're going to go about taxing us, because that's been the result of Prop 13 in California. A lot of people say, no, why are you so focused on California all the time? Because you know why? They are innovative, creative in what they do from a tax perspective, how they deal with social issues, and you like to look at these living experiments in order to determine whether or not it's something you want to emulate. That's why. And they face these issues and address these issues much sooner on the timeline than we do here. Pick a topic, any topic, and I can show it to you. That's why I spend time looking at it. The fallout of Prop 13 is that they have some weird things that they tax there because they froze assessments. And the moment that you give a panel or a committee in the city the ability to do that, subject to the approval of the New Orleans City Council, they've not promulgated the rules, so we don't really know what we're voting on. And I've said before, for me, to vote yes on that would be a very irresponsible vote, because even if you look at the call, you don't know what you're actually voting on, other than the global issue of giving local control. But as we as a city have been fighting for fair share, saying we're not getting this, we're not getting that, why would we want to empower folks to erode the tax base or freeze the tax base at this point in time, knowing the demands that we have for infrastructure dollars and so forth, and the most stable revenue source that you have are property taxes? It just doesn't make any sense to me when we look at the confluence of all of these issues coming to the forefront at this point in time. We got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text 870-870. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, in the next hour, we're going to be talking to Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, about some of the local elections, those in Orleans and Jefferson, St. Tammany, St. Bernard, and others. We'll talk about those races in the next hour. And if you want to go to Tiger Stadium for the LSU-Florida game, we have two ways to win. Here's all you have to do. Tomorrow, listen to Tommy Tucker Show from 6 to 10 or Scoot from 1 to 4. We'll give you the cue to call in. If you're the eighth caller, you win a pair of tickets to the LSU-Florida game, compliments of LSU Sports Properties and Tiger Radio, WWL 870 AM 105.3 FM, and now streaming live. We stream the LSU game on WWL.com and the radio.com app. And I'll be giving out tickets tomorrow as well for the Saints game, the next home game, and we'll be doing that on Thursdays. So you want to pay attention for those three opportunities to win some tickets. Now it's time for a chance to win a cool grand in a free cash giveaway contest. Now's your chance. The code word this hour is basketball. Text BASKETBALL to 72881. That's 72881. Listen for the next code word right before the top of the hour. Every hour now through 4 p.m. Don't miss your chance to win $1,000 eight times a day in our Intercom National Cash Contest. Good luck from all of us at WWL. We never charge for text, but individual plan texts and data rates apply. And remember, please, please, please do not text and drive. That's a dangerous exercise. We'll be right back.